Hey, everyone. This is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9. And still coming at you here live from the center of the universe, unless you're listening to the replay of this, and in which case, then you're hearing the replay. And up in the United Center and in the studio with me here right now is our new superintendent, rookie superintendent, Karen Kwanbach. Karen, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. You know, you had an adventure coming over today.
Just a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Living in the mountains. You just have to relax and enjoy the view.
Well, I appreciate you coming because, you know, we know weekend traffic up here, particularly on a Saturday morning heading this way, could be pretty challenging, to say the least. So, we have a number of items we want to touch on here, but you know, some of this, you had a kickoff with the school district, Clear Creek School District teachers, educators, and you know, let's talk about that.
Okay. I'd love to share the kickoff. It happened a couple weeks ago, and it felt so good to have educators finally in the room. I'd met a few of them before that as they trickled in, as they always do, getting things ready. But to have them all in one place, we started out with an amazing breakfast prepared by our food services, fantastic folks. Bacon was out of this world. That's one of my the best things ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as we did our kickoff, I really came at it in terms of it was important to think about climate and culture and mindset and helping everyone really kind of crack me open as a leader and say, who are you? Who's going to lead our district? And what's the work? And what's this all about? And we began, first of all, with kind of a theme around gifts. And gifts being, we all bring something amazing to our professional lives and to our lives in general. And what gifts do we bring? Everyone received little gift bags because I'm just that kind of, I love stuff like that.
Okay. Nice.
And we talked about, you know, what do we bring? What do we bring to our work? And then shifted that to what do our kids bring to us? What gifts do our kids bring that we as educators are excited to unwrap and discover? And I think that's the right mindset. It's that strengths-based mindset going into the year. I also stress two things that I talked about, I think, last time we were together. Just these two mantras that keep coming to me. One is sharing our stories, and it's got a really nice connection to gifts. And the other is empowering our learners. Mm-hmm. But the sharing our stories is something that I've thought a lot about as I've spent time getting to know people throughout the community. And this was another opportunity. I shared a little bit of who I am as a person, as an educator. What do I bring to Clear Creek? Again, as a leader, crack me open. Let's see who I am. And then our educators had a chance to talk to each other and share their own stories. What brought them to Clear Creek? And then the other piece around empowering our learners is something we'll really unpack throughout the whole year. But it was a great way to start the year off. Great energy in the room. Again, when you finally can see everyone sitting there, wrap your arms around the room and say, we're here together to start this journey and to do something amazing for kids. And that's, I believe, really set the tone for the year. And I keep saying this, but it's true. I still feel like I've won the lottery as I...
Yeah.
Talk with educators, and I get to know them. And even after the kickoff, we have this amazing mix of dynamic, energetic educators in our county. And that day just brought that home.
There's so much excitement here, what's happening in the school district.
Yeah.
And you're a major part of all that coming in as the new superintendent. Okay, a whole new you know, pathway, if you will.
Yeah.
On that. And I recall when we talked back, I believe it was in June, and
yep.
we talked about story and our personal stories, what brings us to that. And once we get into, when I recall from the classroom, and you get into the routine and somewhere around, you know, by the end of September, if not before, you start to lose that perspective,
yes.
you know, because you're into the nuts and bolts, the nitty gritty, you're doing the day to day, and you've got to know the kids and somewhat, you know, at least
yes.
on the surface there.
Yep.
And we tend to lose that perspective. Sometimes our I don't want to say lose our humanity, but that understanding of that other person in history or her story. And so I think it's such a powerful way to start the year off. So that's kudos to you for starting off on that foot there.
Thank you.
And then empowering them as well, because they, to remind the teachers, and that's great because you spend this year, teaching is a very energetic, draining process. It can be fulfilling also. It absolutely should be fulfilling, yes. But you're giving a lot.
Yep.
And generally by the end of the school year, you get around April, May, you're starting to get worn out.
Yeah.
And so you get this time where you can rejuvenate, whether it's personal time or you can, you know, you're taking some classes, you know, advancing your own degree, whatever. But then to come back and start anew,
yes.
Start fresh. And it's a whole new year, a whole new day, and they're all new kids. And they've grown and changed too from,
yes.
You know, even though. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Just a quick side note, thinking ahead to end of September, because that's coming, you know, before we know it, and beginning of October. One of the things that I'll continue to put out with our educators and really talk about as part of our culture and climate is to really think about, as professionals and educators, how do we take care of ourselves? How do we refill up our buckets? How do we stay inspired? How do we tap into our passions? And how do we know when to rest and take breaks? And
yes.
So by the end of September, taking breaks and refilling our, our buckets, our levels of energy, but also, are we reading? Are we taking time to go on those fun trails on the internet that may have something to do with what we could teach with our kids? Are we tapping into our passions? That should go on all year long, and that should keep us going way into when we kind of hit that point.
Yeah, restorative process there, because I use a metaphor here, like of the Major League Baseball season.
Yeah.
You know, they start back in like the end of March, and they go, you know, if they're fortunate enough to go all the way to October, that's a long time, a lot of games you're playing constantly, and it's the physical toll, it's the mental toll, and sometimes we don't realize how much of a toll it's taking.
Yeah.
And you make an excellent point on that if the teachers don't take care of themselves first,
yes.
You know, and I say this about everybody in life,
yeah.
You don't take care of you, you can't take care of anyone else. But
right.
When you have 30 kiddos out there, or like a high school teacher may have 150, whatever, after, you know, how many classes, that can really sap your energy. So the restoration, it has to be an ongoing process.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I wholeheartedly support that. That's good practice in a organization's climate and culture.
And, you know, I'm going to shift here a little bit, Karen, and talk about the school performance frameworks. Okay, I'm not a big fan of standardized testing, but it's a necessary evil. I know it's out there. There was an interesting article a week or two ago in the Post about how it's starting to lose its power in
right.
a way that people are starting to step back and say standardized test scores are not the end all of judging how well schools are performing, how students are performing, and teachers and everything too. So it's such a great message to read. But let's talk about that in context of the school district here.
Yeah, absolutely. So first I'll echo exactly what you said. Our standardized tests, even our school performance frameworks, they're one piece of the pie. We care deeply about the whole experience for kids. And the most important thing is when we go into classrooms, when we walk classrooms, when we as educators look out at our students, that our students are having amazing, engaging, rigorous learning experiences. And you can measure that in lots of different ways. Standardized testing is just one. And honestly, as we know at this point, it's an autopsy, right? It's last year's data.
I never thought of it that way, but
it is.
Yeah, there you go.
There's
the cadaver.
Yes, and so we'll learn from the cadaver, right? I mean, that's part of what we do. We study our data, and we think about as a system, what does that mean for us? And truly, when you look at student growth, you're looking at the last 2 years, because you're looking at a year-to-year growth as well as achievement in 1 year. With all that said, we had some exceptional celebrations this year in Clear Creek. And I can't take any credit for this. I can just celebrate it loudly, because it happened because of our educators in classrooms and our leaders and everyone who's got a part to play, including parents, right? They're part of this. we are completely green on our school performance frameworks. And what that means is that every school in Clear Creek this year, as well as the district, has what's called a performance rating. And we had two schools in particular that saw enormous growth. Carlson Elementary grew from priority improvement to performance. That's two levels when it comes to our school performance framework or our SPF. And then our Clear Creek Middle School also grew two levels from priority up to performance. That's fantastic.
Congratulations to the students and the teachers. Yes. Everybody out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting work. And again, it's an autopsy. We'll be digging into that data. In fact, on Tuesday afternoon, I'll begin that work with some of our leaders, just peeling apart trends. We tend to look at 3-year trends and what can we learn from that to help us get better at our craft, but then also put our time where it matters the most.
Yeah, I guess test scores are important in that sense that you can measure then what is that level of performance for the students' abilities, you know, anywhere from the knowledge up to the skills, you know, with the writing, interpretations, et cetera. So they are helpful, but as I say about, you know, if we just make them the one and the only judge of a school,
right,
that's not fair to education because it entails so much more. And, you know, when we talk about the whole child and every child is different, you know, like the old snowflake thing. And all of them come in from different experiences and backgrounds. Some of them have very supportive home lives. Some of them have very challenging home lives.
Yes.
Some of them show up to school. A lot of them do without having breakfast, having had a good night's sleep the night before.
Yep.
And yet you are expected to teach them and advance them along. So it's really good information to be coming in from those tests.
Yes, absolutely. And just like you said, it's a piece. This year, we'll look at multiple measures, just like we have in the past, but I'd like to increase what I would call the perceptual data. We need to make sure that we're talking to our kids and our kids are part of weighing in on what they're experiencing. And they so succinctly can talk about what they believe they should be learning, what they are learning, how they're entering into the classroom, how their social emotional state is, how is it with their peers. There's lots of perceptual data that goes into the whole experience that we can and should be tapping into. And same thing from our teachers. Our teachers are absolutely amazing evaluators of what they see with our kids in the classroom. So it's more than just standardized tests. And you know, as an educator, you can look at benchmark, you can look at kind of short cycle assessments throughout the year, but you also have to look at that perceptual data, especially when we worry about our social emotional needs of our kids. We want to make sure we're not missing anything and that our kids are leaving us, not just, you know, I love the term well-rounded, but also just emotionally confident to go out into the world and do something amazing. And they believe they can contribute. That's part of our responsibility, too.
Yeah, that's the ultimate, is that if you have, if a student goes out having faith in him or herself that I can do it, they've already won the battle. Now it's just a matter of getting out there and doing it then, to have that confidence instilled in them. Back in my day, which isn't all that long ago, we used to call such stuff as best practices. Is that still a term in vogue there?
Yes, okay, absolutely. I'm not too- it's still best practice, right?
Yeah, that we can do there. So, and you were talking about the teachers, and I'm real excited. We'll come back here as a couple things happen specific with teachers here. But I know from your end, something you really wanted to focus on was bringing in and retaining top-notch best educators, best teachers. Talk about what your program is, you know, what you have in mind, and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great as I've been out and about again, just on what I call listening to or really talking with leaders, educators, community. I didn't think I would be able to draft out our priorities for another couple of months, but already that's really emerged. And the number one priority, as you already identified, is what I would call best educators. And there's probably a much fancier name that somebody could come up with, but at its core, That's what it's all about. And again, when I say educators, I'm not only talking about our fantastic classroom teachers, those folks who are, you know, in front of kids, they matter so much. I'm also referring to our bus drivers, our secretaries, our paraprofessionals, our food service folks, our custodians, because everyone in this district plays a part in the experience of our kids. They all contribute to a high quality education for our kids, that learning experience. And so when we talk about recruiting and retaining, it's everyone. We need everyone here. We need the very best educators we can get. We know that compensation is core to that. Absolutely. That's probably one of the first places that we should be talking about, and happy to talk a little bit more about that. But compensation is important, and there are short-term things happening there as well as some longer-term initiatives, and I'll let you prompt me in a couple minutes to come back to that. In addition, educators typically want to have opportunities to learn and to grow and improve their craft. And so a big part of my work this year will be ensuring we're delivering on that, that we're paying attention to teacher interests and passions, and we're providing professional learning in ways that aligns with what they see as needs. It's always a challenge, just like it is in our classrooms, to make sure we're differentiating based on needs. And then there's climate and culture, and that's, again, how we started the year. I want every educator in Clear Creek to know and to feel at their core that they are part of something amazing. This district's incredible. I'll tell you that right now. I don't know that people outside of Clear Creek have a deep understanding of the incredible gifts that exist here.
Yeah.
And I want our educators to be so proud of the work they do and be part of that, because people will stay when they're part of something amazing. Getting a little bit more narrow when it comes to the actual recruiting and retention, we've got some best practices when it comes to recruiting that we'll embrace this year. Our job descriptions, I guess, are a really good example. They've been good. We are underselling ourselves. So when we are out and about talking with prospective educators, when we're putting things out on social media or on our website or in our job descriptions, we need to articulately say, why is Clear Creek the best place to come be an educator? And that's something you can look around and you can get so excited about that. Look where we are.
Yeah.
There's, and I could go on and on about that, but I'll pause for a minute, take a drink of water, and you ask what you want to know more in that area.
Oh, that's it. No, it's fantastic, because it is a whole package.
Yep.
You know, and when you were talking about, like, what we call support staff.
Yep.
So a bus driver needs to know more how to handle, I jokingly call them the cheese wagons. I learned that from my kids way back when. And, you know, and I wrote my article on that, I think for next week, but mentioned that. But how to negotiate this, you know, pretty big machine.
Yes.
Okay. That is filled with all these human beings that sometimes are a little bit antsy, bouncing around. But the bus drivers are really the kiddos that ride the bus are the first ones the kids see and the last ones they see as adults when they go to school. They're the bookends on the school day in that way. And so for them to have good management skills and relational skills with the kiddos, the charges on the bus, get to know them on a personal level, that goes a long way, just starting those kids off. So when they walk into the building, they've already had a good experience, you know, with an adult who got them to there in the first place, and they could trust him or her to get them back, you know, especially when it's crappy roads and things like that. Yeah. The integral part of all these people, like you point out, the custodial staff, the cafeteria, whatever, it's all part of that package.
Yes. And one of the, again, I'm going to keep coming back to this, one of the many, many gifts that I've experienced in Clear Creek already, our drivers, for example, they know their kids and they know their families. I spent 2 days riding buses in the morning. Oh my goodness. First, what an amazing experience. Like, talk about a beautiful sunrise over at King Murphy. Oh,
wow.
Was riding up I-70 up to Empire and Dumont, and you see all the little places our kids are tucked away. But to a T, our drivers, they know our kids and they're connecting with the parents who are bringing the kids, and they know exactly what grades the kids are in, and they could tell me the kids' stories. And these are drivers who, in many cases, have known our kids for years and years. They're like a family member.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom, you know, radar went off, and I thought, oh my God, this is so fantastic. It's it's a carpool. It's not really a bus. That was pretty amazing. And the same thing with our secretaries and our custodians. They know our kids, and they're part of our community. They have kids in the schools themselves.
Sure.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And then, you know, your point about job descriptions for incoming educators to enhance that, to emphasize that point there. And I'm going to kick back over to the teachers. We were mentioning them earlier about compensation.
Yeah.
And I was excited to read in the Current this week that, one, a tremendous compensation package.
Yeah.
I believe that they said to be approved. I assume it was. Has that been approved by
at
the board?
Meeting, yes.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yes.
And kudos to board member Nick Kaufman. I think he was the one who proposed a compromise.
Yeah.
And the teachers, and that's what, and I'll lead into the other, then I'll let you comment on other, is that the school board's ready, if they haven't done it yet, to recognize the Clear Creek Education Association as the bargaining agent. And that empowers the teachers.
Yes.
And when you could, you know, sit down and say, okay, this flat rate, it's wonderful. However, it's not going to work across. And then you can start to jawbone back and forth and figure out, well, is there another way?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, oftentimes. It's how do we get there? And so to empower the teachers by recognizing their association as a legitimate part of the process there to establish wages and salaries and benefits and, you know, sick leave and everything, all that, you know, that comes into play, all that is critical to the a teacher's well-being, okay, and even support staff, too, if they would be involved. So I'll let you comment on all of that. I'm excited to read it.
Yeah, it is exciting. And I have to give kudos to the folks who were working on this before I even walked in the door. When I went to the first board meeting in June, was really excited to hear the compensation package that was already discussed and was quickly approved. And there were two pieces to that. One is the, you know, the steps and levels, which in Clear Creek equals about 2.29%, and it varies, you know, kind of depending on where you're at in terms of years as well as education. And then the increase to the base, that was the $3,400, so 10% to the base, which when you looked at it, and this is where you really have to listen to those stakeholders, right? That's where the educators as well as the Board of Ed did a fantastic job listening to each other and then coming up with that third solution, because it's never just one or the other. There's almost always a third way. What the $3,400 or 8% of the salary, whichever is greater, what that did was not only acknowledge a 10% increase to our almost new, our inexperienced teachers, but it honored the teachers as they moved into different places on the scale, whether it's through years or education, because otherwise the percentages weren't as great. And you're absolutely right. That was Nick who had developed that. And all the board members had worked really hard to say, well, what should we be looking at? What options are out there? So that was pretty exciting. And again, I kind of walked into that, and then the board just approved that at a special meeting. At the same time, as you mentioned, as I joined the district, there had been conversations about recognizing CCCEA, what they call the Clear Creek Educators Association. And again, we've really had to do a good job, board included, of listening to the educators. And it's, again, it's all educators. It's bus drivers, it's food services, it's teachers in classrooms. But really trying to understand what are the needs, what's the why behind that. And I know at our last meeting, as we talked about it out loud, I threw a lot of questions out there. And I think people kind of heard that and maybe thought, well, what does that mean? Well, it probably doesn't mean anything except for I have questions. I have only kind of grown up professionally in a union district, and so I'm very comfortable and familiar with how that works. It's pretty new for Clear Creek. And so as we listen to the stakeholders, what I love is that people are listening to each other and they're thinking about, well, what does that mean? What does it mean to be recognized as a collective bargaining unit?
Right.
What do negotiations mean? What kinds of things are important to us? And how can we ensure that it's presented in a way that welcomes everyone and anyone, not fragmenting? And I've been thrilled with CCCEA leadership as they've worked so hard to make that true, especially with our new teachers. And then thinking ahead to what are the biggest needs? And you're spot on. They care so much about this district, and they care so much about even some of our historical trends. We've been declining enrollment, celebrations this year in terms of achievement, but that hasn't always been true. Compensation, taking care of our folks. And they just said, we need to work together on this.
Yep.
Anytime it's collaborative, I'm in. Yep. Whether we, to me, it doesn't matter what you call it, but we need to collaborate because no one person or group can figure this out on their own. It's too complex.
It is. And many years ago, 20 years ago, I was the president of the Summit County Education Association. And we launched into a negotiation with the school district, very similar to what CCEA is doing here.
Yeah.
And I stayed back from the specifics of the negotiating process because, or the particulars, you know, like what's the salary scale look like? Because I had a big job just running the association without, you know, so I had, you know, the board, the teachers represented, you know, they handled everything there. But I was just the guy who stood in the background and said, okay, let's keep this on track. But in the process, I was the only one. But the other, we learned so much because, you know, people, oh, you're only looking at your own, well, our own interest. And, I, you know, the superintendent over there at the time, he put it very well to me. And he says, look, my job is to look out for the interest of the district.
Yeah.
Your job is to look out for the interest of the teachers.
Right.
Our job together is to look out for the interest of everything there and how they're going to relate. And that's where I really became familiar with and appreciative of the role of the school board, of the role of the superintendent, and what they're not just this other person that has this job that makes, you know, too much money or something like that, that they, you know, that these people are all vested in, and what is their job in them. And it really, it was a great educational experience for me, and I hope and I believe it will happen with the leaders of the CCEA and of the district. And you start, what are the particulars of the teachers too? And like you say, collaboration, and we get to know each other out there, and all of a sudden, you know, it's not a we versus them or anything like that. It's not, you know, this duality. It's an us. How do we make this work? And the compensation practice or decision right here, I should say, seems to be the first indicator of that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We've got great conversations coming up at our September board meeting. We have two September board meetings. One is a work session on the 12th, and that'll be dedicated to some other topics. And then we'll talk about it out loud, and the board will take a vote at September 20th at the business meeting.
Okay.
So, yeah, good stuff coming up. And again, fortunate in that we've got great people who are thinking about this together.
And I want to give a shout out to the board members themselves, Mitch Houston, the president, and Jen Castle.
Yep.
Larry Pryor,
Pyers,
I'm sorry, and I know Larry Pyers, I just messed up his name a little bit, but Nick I already mentioned, but then our new member, Sandy Sushler, coming on board, former teacher here, that's exciting too.
Oh my goodness, I feel fortunate when I see my educator friends in other districts. The first question they always ask is, how's your board? You know, they kind of give you that sideways look.
Yeah.
And I just look them in the eye and I grin from ear to ear and I say, I've got a fantastic board. I really do. I've got good independent thinkers. They don't just nod their heads, you know, on whatever. They really listen. They pay attention. I send them a lot. I send them weekly update that has many links to lots of different things, and they take the time to educate themselves on the things that are relevant in our district. They talk to each other. They're members of the community. Those are important. And that's exactly what you want in a board. You want them to disagree a little bit. You want to have good, lively conversation. And that's what makes your board a good decision-making group. Because at the end of the day, they're the ones who are truly making the toughest, most messy decisions that will impact our kids and impact all of us. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah. And, you know, with the possible exception of Sandy, I sat on the Clear Creek School Board. And so, of course, I'm a retired teacher. That the others are not professional educators themselves. They come from different aspects of the private world.
Yeah.
And so when we start talking educationese, sometimes we get lost in the acronyms, which to us makes sense. To them, it's like hieroglyphics. So to help them move forward and understand so they can make great decisions, because their job is policy to set it and everything. But they hire you to run the district. And that's yes. what I always said, you know, I learned this a long time ago. School board has one yeah. employee. Mm-hmm. That's you.
Yeah.
And then after that, you take care of everything else, you know. But they have to be able to ask good questions and to learn themselves. And then you make their job easier if yes. you do your job. And then they can take time off.
Yes. Kind yes. of. And they're volunteer. I
totally.
Keep reminding people that they're volunteer and it's tricky work. And this year I've promised that it will be fun. Everything we do, it's going to be fun. It won't be easy, but it's going to be right. fun. Love, love, love to get them into the schools. Second half of the year, we'll shift our work sessions from Two Brothers out into the schools, and we'll start our work sessions by having lunch with the kids, and everyone oh, will nice. Sit at a different table talking with kids because that's yeah. fun, right?
Yeah.
And it helps us immerse ourselves kind of in the culture of that school. We'll also have opportunities to do classroom visits together. You know, they're already at the sporting events and the back to school nights and the conferences, but to have our folks in classrooms, because my job is to make sure they have all the information they need. Some of that's just intuitive and being part of what's happening in the schools. And plus, that's the most fun work. What, you, yeah. Wouldn't you rather be in a kindergarten classroom than anywhere else yeah. in the world?
Oh, absolutely. Well, maybe no, not me. I was a high school teacher. So okay. Thank you very much. I'll take the freshmen. How's okay. that?
Yes.
There you go. I could deal with them, you know, when they're bouncing around. I go, okay. But that's a whole other story there. Yeah. And while we're on the topic a little bit, I just want to segue because we do have school board elections coming up.
Yes.
I understand Larry and I think Sandy's running. And is Nick up for reelection? Is he running again? I don't know. So
yeah,
I'll let
okay.
you. And then people still, if they want to be on the board, they could submit a petition. How's that done and to whom? So let's get
sure,
that in.
Sure, yeah. So actually, the deadline was on Friday. We've.
Too late then.
Yes, yes.
That was yesterday.
Right. Although, I'll put out there, if we don't have people for different district areas, we can appoint. And in some cases, we've had to do that before.
Okay.
Larry is running. Sandy is running. Nick has decided not to be part of the school board anymore. He is just too busy as a sure. father and a businessman, although I still know where to find him, so I can tap into his great thinking. I told him that.
Your neighbors, yeah. right?
Yeah. He's both in Evergreen, and he's just, I want to thank him out loud for everything he's done.
I've watched him on the board, and he's done outstanding work.
Yes. Yeah, okay. He's fantastic. So we've had some folks who are interested from that area. Everything was due 3:30 on Friday, and then there's this kind of frantic process of making sure that on the petitions, everyone who's on there is a, you know, a valid voter. That process is in play right now, so we should know after the long weekend how that's all going to play out and who's running for different areas besides the folks that I've mentioned, or if we're going to need to appoint.
Okay, so, excellent. There, yeah. yeah. And there's a, and I'm gonna let you take the lead on this one here. When we were talking, and I'm not, and I looked at the background a little bit, but you had talked about this work called essentialism.
Yeah.
I want to touch on it. I just blah, 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 like this essentialism. Yeah. Okay, get that down.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Why was that important? Because and then I want to wrap up with another one, not so fun topic.
Okay.
On vaping.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But let's talk about the essentialism.
Okay. Yeah. Great. I'm glad you asked about that. So I had again the gift of having our leaders up at a conference in Breckenridge in July, and one of our keynote speakers was Greg McEwen, who labels himself an essentialist and has a book called Essentialism. And so we all as a group thought, we loved his talk. You know, you get a little taste of it for an hour. And since then, a number of us have either read the book or, like in my case, I listened to it on the way back and forth to work. And I've read a ton of, you know, leadership books and education books. This one has absolutely pushed my thinking. And it's one of those that I just keep texting other educator friends about. Like, you've got to read this or listen to it. Because it brings in so many things that you know you should be doing, but you can't quite figure out how. It helps you really focus on what's important right now. And each chapter has, you know, kind of a different piece or a different strategy. And the way I'm describing it, it makes it sound a little bit like a self-help book. It's so much more than that. What it's really forced me as a leader to think about is, what's the most important thing, even like right now, for me to be doing? So I shouldn't be thinking about, you know, the emails that I need to do or what I'm going to do when I walk out. Right. I'm solely focused on our conversation. Same thing every single day when I'm doing my work. And this has been, I will say, this has been not life-altering, but it's really pushed my practice as a leader. I think about what's coming up that day, what's the most important thing to do, and what can I put either further down on the priority list, or what he calls it editing, what can I edit? Even when I did my presentation for our kickoff, I tried to be so careful about not overwhelming people.
Yeah.
And he even talks about that process. You might start with 30 slides and then you get it down to 10. What's the most important message? What noise can you remove from the conversation? And he also talks about, I love this, protecting the asset, which means it's what we said before, you're taking care of yourself. If you're not getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night, you're fooling yourself. And I can easily fall into that trap. You know, I've got 2 kids, I'm a busy mom, I'm a busy educator. I could devote 24/7 to this district because I love it that much. And I'm not just, I really do, I love the kids.
Yeah.
I love the community. But you have to take care of yourself. And you'll see me running around town. I go for a run every day. And I've really been good about shutting it down and getting the sleep that I need. And it sounds like a really, really simple thing, but he tells different tales of very successful people who didn't do that and what ultimately, what happened to them because of it.
It's, burnout.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not your best. You think you're your best,
yeah,
but you're not. You're doing things in very superficial ways. We're better as people, as educators, as professionals, when we're in that creative, focused space and we come up with amazing solutions when we allow ourselves to be in that space.
Yeah, that's, in a way I put it in my own private practice, I call it the Zen of whatever, that you are so immersed in what you're doing. And it could be just washing dishes.
Yeah.
Or dusting.
Yep.
But you're not thinking of anything else. You're simply dusting or washing dishes, whatever.
Yep.
And to block everything else out, like with you right now, we're having this conversation.
Yep.
I have a few other things in my mind, how do I, wrap? Yeah, yada, like this.
Right.
But I'm not thinking about what's going to happen later. Your focus is here. And it's so critical for teachers when they walk into the classroom.
Yeah.
And when the bell rings or whatever, and I hated bells, and I have to tell the story, I had kind of forgotten about it, but when that happens, that moment in the focus, but one of my practices was that I would start the day off with either, in the old days, like a transparency put on the overhead, sort of thing. Or, once I had my computer going, I could put it up on the screen. And it could be a pithy little quote.
Yeah.
It could be a cartoon, like in the Denver Post, they have this cartoon. This boy is 16 years old. It's called Zits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hysterical, And particularly the ones that apply, like going back to school and everything. I'd cut it out, and or I'd get it and make a picture, put it up there. And then when it was time to start, I would turn that on, and I would have music playing. Sometimes it might be Enya doing something really soft.
Yes.
Other times it might be a little bit more rock and rolling, like for my generation, Rolling Stones or something. But it was something that when the music started, so it was auditory and it was visual. That brought the attention to the kids. So they're all scrambling and they're like this. And then it was like, boom, like this. So I wasn't one to stand up there and start yelling, because when you yell, they just yell louder, But start off in the right note, and to be, then when you're in with that group of kiddos, you are there 100%.
Yes.
Okay. And keep that energy, that focus there, because you're cognizant not only on what you're teaching and how you're but what's happening with every one of those kiddos out there in there. Is someone falling asleep, someone distracted, looking down beneath the desk and saying, okay, sending a text message, So you're so cognizant of everything, but you're immersed in that moment and not losing. That sounds like what he's saying here in this book for me. Anyway.
Yes, absolutely. You've grounded the kids in that space, in that room.
Mm-hmm.
This is our time together. Right here and now, and we're going to learn together and create something amazing together right now, our time and space. That's a beautiful thing. And that engages kids when you're engaged.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And you start off on a right note, and sometimes it's a pithy quote. And, or, maybe it's a journal topic or something, like just write on this here. you know, whatever. But it's to bring them in, and then you become one. You're just you're on your own little tribe. You're in this segment of the universe.
Yep.
That's it, and everything else out there, you know, goes by the wayside. So excellent, yeah, great stuff, great stuff. But I mentioned a few minutes ago, I did want to bring up about, because it's a difficult issue right now going on in our culture, and that's vaping.
Yeah.
And a few days ago, I was listening to CPR, and, you know, they had some reports on there, and then, of course, even nationwide about the epidemic that is starting with it and how different communities are putting limits on age and everything. And so I'm not an expert on it. Kids will try, you know, we have addictive practices, you know, whether it's alcohol or whatever it might be. And I'm wondering where the district is there anything, a focus of some sort, you know, through the counselors, through the healthy, your nurses, whatever, at the district level to address this, at least in a preventive measure, or is it already starting here too? I don't know. And of course, you're a mom, you're a parent,
yes.
And so you're wearing a couple hats here too, as an educator and as a parent. So if you could kind of talk about that,
yeah,
please.
Absolutely. Well, I share, I think, the concern of so many, you know, across the nation. And then in Colorado, I believe we are the number one state for teen vaping, which as a mom makes my stomach hurt, and as an educator makes my stomach hurt even more. And Clear Creek is not isolated from that. We've got kids who are struggling with it, absolutely. We, for this year, for the first time, am trying something a little bit different because we see the increase amongst our kids. We'll use a program called Second Chance, and it's from the Colorado Department of Public Health, and it's a partnership with a few other organizations. But it's really, it's a reactive one, but it's a little bit of a proactive education one. And then I'll go back to some of the proactive practices. In the past, when kids get caught vaping at school, it's an out-of-school suspension. You know, it's sort of this, you know, zero tolerance, non-negotiable. But what we're missing is that education piece for kids. Because, you know, kids don't get into things because they really think it's cool to get addicted, right? I don't know that they really know some of the negative effects. They believe they're immortal. They believe their friends before they believe the adults, right? That's teenage behavior. And once they try it, and a lot of times they're hooked. And so how do we help them understand? Why don't we just give you 5 packs of cigarettes instead of this Juul? Because this is what you're doing to your body. Let's get visual about it. So this program is instead of a suspension, and it's on a computer, and kids, it's at its core, it's an education program where kids learn some of the things that happen to their bodies and why it even matters when you're vaping. Because again, I don't think they truly know what they're getting into. As a school district, we also do proactive measures with kids, and we've got posters up and we talk to kids about the dangers of it. Sometimes I think they look at us as adults as kind of talking heads. And again, they think as adults, you don't get it. It's, I want to be cool. And when you talk to kids and you ask them, like, why did you even start? That those are the words that come out of their mouths a lot. Well, it was cool. I wanted to look cool. I wanted to be cool. My friends are doing it. And then suddenly they've got this habit that becomes more and more expensive. And then when you read some of the research and the articles that's out there, you see there's some really awful health benefits. So the mom in me, I actually experienced this with my own son. So here's full disclosure, caught my own son, 14-year-old, beginning of the summer with a Juul. And I was so shocked because I have 2 kids who obviously I think the world of love very much. And every day when I dropped him off for school, I said, you know, make good choices, hugs, not drugs. And he'd kind of giggle and get it. And that was kind of our mantra. And so I felt like this was such a... going backwards, and it was such a lack of, he was grounded for 2 weeks. All of his technology went away. That was probably the biggest consequence, right? Like he lost his phone for 2 weeks, which actually was a really good thing that had amazing side benefits, whole different conversation. So I think about that, and I think about how do our other parents get involved? I know for me as a mom, you know, the room's not off limits. Backpack's not off limits. Jack of pockets are not off limits. I love you dearly, and I trust you, but you're a teenager and I'm going to go through your stuff periodically because I love you that much. As parents, we can't be afraid to do that. As educators, we have to give that same message. Now, we're not going to go through their backpacks and their pockets unless there's some, you know, reasonable cause. We don't typically do that. But we can look our kids in the eye and say, I care about you so much that I don't want you getting involved in this. You might think it's cool right now, but you come back to me in 5 or 10 years and you tell me how much you've spent on this and you tell me the health benefits. This is just a little drop in the bucket right now. It's not worth it. And you have to talk to kids in a way that they'll respect. You can't do the standing up on the stage and let me lecture you about all these things. You got to go eye to eye. And you got to talk to them like real people and really tell them, this is a bad decision and I'm not doing this because I'm an adult and I want you to follow the rules. I'm doing it because I care about you as a person. I think that's our best tact.
Yeah, and it brings back memories of, because I taught both somewhat social studies at the high school level, but primarily English, and the readings, whatever, in our writing would open up to having engaging conversations on this. And to have a full-throated conversation, like you say, treat them as if they're real people. Well, they are. And give them that respect, which they then can start educating each other and start doing some research on this too and bringing it back and talk about the peer pressures that come in there as well. So rather than talking at them, but engaging them in the conversation in a lesson, and it doesn't have to be in health class. It could be in social studies. It could be in science class, for gosh sakes, when you're talking, you know, what's happening to the body in there. And you start bringing up the evidence of, you know, people are getting deathly ill and dying from this stuff now, you know. And so the evidence is starting to roll in here. Because kids don't know about addictions. They're too young to know about addictions. They haven't, they're too young to have experience other than to observe it. Maybe they have, you know, siblings or parents or, you know, whoever, you know, that have been addicted to whatever it might be. Alcoholism might be the primary one, but others, drugs. So they could see it, but still it's a visual type of thing. And those kids might be a little bit farther down the road. The other thing, too, a comment too, Karen, is that, like you say, and thank you for being so honest, you know, like, you know, in your family. And here you are, a mom who's involved, and you're there, and you're very knowledgeable. You're an educator. You're right there. How many other kids, though, don't have that benefit? Okay, come from families that are in crisis. Or, you know, second homes, whatever it might be, or, you know, the parents are just so engaged, you know, trying to put food on the table. They're not always available to be looking over their kids and are not really cognizant. And we lose sight of those there, too, and how the kids really need support. And then the parents also, you know, to be informed, too. So it's such a complicated but powerful issue right now in our culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I again, I think it takes all of us. It takes the community. And if our we've got, like just like you said, we sometimes we've got parents who, they have busy, busy lives. They're impacted. We as a community can wrap our supports around kids. And you know, if you look up to Carbondale, I was reading an article about the mayor and some of the work that he's doing to say no thank you to this in our town. I wonder what's possible in our county. Because we're fortunate in that we've got so many organizations, so many people that put kids first. Is there something that we as a county could even be doing to really stop this epidemic?
And to get involved with the county health and then the individual towns themselves, but a large part of the county is unincorporated, so not in Georgetown or Idaho Springs or whatever, but to get those officials involved in here too, and to, because the important thing is to start talking about it in the first place. If you don't talk about it, it's kind of like in the back corner there, and it's like anything else. If you don't, people get uncomfortable with it. Well, darn it, you know, talk about it because this is real stuff, and kids value that. They feel so respected when you talk to them as adults. And saying, you know, you're now at that point in life, especially when you're 15, 16 years old, and you're making some life decisions here. Like you say, hugs, not drugs, you know, sort of thing. And I go, okay, one of these here. But then that even that's a constant message. Good for you for saying that to him and your daughter too.
Yeah, and I still say it to him. Yeah. And I check his backpack and his room.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And just love him dearly. Him.
Exactly. And say, and son, in 5 years when you're off to college, I'm still going to say hugs, not drugs.
Absolutely. Good choices.
Oh, that's awesome. But it is something we need to be aware and stay on. And thank you for, you know, addressing that as well. Anything else before we wrap up, you know, out to the community there about the schools, what you're doing, anything like that? You had a fabulous race there. And, you know, was it the slacker you ran?
I did. I did do the slacker, which was amazing. And then I volunteered for the Georgetown to Idaho Springs half, and that was equally as fun, being on the football field and handing out the medals and the bags and watching that whole thing happen. Talk about an amazing group of volunteers.
Yeah.
In fact, we recognized our Clear Creek School District Booster Club for what I call the Altitude Award at our last board meeting, along with three other groups. We recognized our ed tech folks because they installed 42 security cameras thanks to a grant they wrote over the summer. So that's an increase to cameras that exist. That was amazing. The Booster Club was one. We recognize our custodians and our maintenance folks for also the amazing job they did this summer getting the buildings ready. They're rock stars.
Oh, yeah.
They just function kind of behind the scenes. Yeah. But our buildings look good. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And we don't have a huge crew. They just rock it. And then the final Altitude Award at the board meeting was for our cheerleaders who did Stuff the Bus at Walmart, which just meant they got all kinds of school supplies for kids, which was amazing. And that's all volunteer, just because they're amazing kids.
No, that's neat. It's so great to hear such wonderful stuff happening, you know, and having been in this, you know, education for almost 30 years and now out of it formally for 10, whatever, that's okay. But, you know, it's kind of like still in my heart. And, you know, I write in a paper there to say that, you know, when I see those cheese wagons taken off, it's kind of like it's with joy and then melancholy too, because you kind of miss it. But, you know, I celebrate those days. I was in the classroom and they weren't always pleasant. Okay, that's part of it in life, and it's not supposed to be always pleasant.
Right.
But, you know, when you look at it, I am so blessed. I was so blessed to have spent that much time, you know, in education, in the different classrooms with kids and friends to this day, the colleagues that you have and the connections you make, there's no way you can get it any better, I don't think.
No, I agree. We're in the best profession and we, you know, again, I have a firm belief we're here for a reason and we do our work for a reason. And we're lucky in that the work we do matters because kids are just the most amazing, wonderful people to work with. I think the last thing I'd love to put out, if that's okay, is I will shortly in the next couple of weeks be seeking all kinds of volunteers, which I know previous educators as well as community members, parents, anyone are more than welcome.
Whoever that might be. I got that. Slow on the uptick.
There are opportunities for everyone for small time amounts and large time amounts, but I'll just throw a few of them out there. We will shortly be looking for members of our District Accountability Committee. That's a group that'll help us as a district kind of shape the direction. There's some real specific areas that they advise us on, including budget and school improvement efforts, but that's an exciting group. And there's building accountability committees as well. There's a connection there, but my ask will be around the district accountability committee because my principals look for their building folks. We will, at each of our three elementary schools, be very shortly begin the design process for playgrounds. Thanks to our voters, we'll be installing new playgrounds next summer. But that design process begins now, even though we won't sell our bonds till winter, till mid-year.
Kim.
But we want to design the coolest, amazing, most amazing playgrounds. And we'll ask for parents, kids, teachers, and community members to be part of that. And then I've got two other ones that are not yet formed, but I'll be asking for volunteers. You know, we talked about educators earlier and recruiting and retaining. I would love for a volunteer group to help me with what I call low to no cost incentives. Because I believe if we go out to our community and we ask different businesses or even nonprofits, hey, would you be willing to give our educators a discount? You know, like Barnes & Noble does a 15% educator discount. Who in our local community might be willing to provide some perks for our teachers, our educators in general? And then are there places or things that we can provide to our educators? Again, that's a perk for working in the best county ever. So I'll be looking for a group of volunteers to help me with that. And then the final one will be I'll be pulling together a group to welcome our new families when they come to Clear Creek. I'd love to have kind of that entry point, and they get welcomed at their schools, don't get me wrong, but as a district, mm-hmm. how can we provide you maybe with kind of a welcome kit of some sorts that, you know, as parents provide you, here's some great places to go that are kid friendly, here's some different organizations that you might want to connect with. Here's a really cool, we've got these little white decals that we're putting on the back of our cars. I'll get you some of those for Clear Creek. Mm-hmm. Just to welcome them in. We're glad you're here. So I'll be looking for some volunteers to help me with that as well.
Very nice.
Yeah, all kinds of opportunities, Jerry.
Exactly. Yeah, no, there are. And my guest previous to you coming in, Jeff Stover, talking about the Central City Poetry Fest. And that's what he was talking, looking for volunteers as well for over there. And then I got thinking, especially our middle and particularly the high school students, because they're older, they're more mature, they can, you know, direct people to get them. And I'm going to hook you with Jeff to see if we can start doing a little interplay there between what Central City's doing. And the great thing, too, over with at the end of the Poetry Fest, it's on the 21st, is their homecoming dance and everything in the same building, the Opera House over there. So, boy, if we can get our kids over there and they could start, and it's just right over the hill, just over Oh My God Road.
That'd be awesome. We'd love to connect.
Yeah, it's all about relationships and everything. Yep. All right. Okay, everyone, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9. Been visiting here on the Rabbit Hole with Superintendent Karen Quanbeck, and I really appreciate everything Karen is doing, all the teachers, the school board, support staff, everything to make education, you know, the best it could be. And, you know, and it keeps getting better and fun. Yeah. Education is fun, you know, and should be, you know, like that. So we're going to keep on doing it. Okay. All right, everyone. And we'll be back. Okay. Take care. Bye.